1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Red Beard, and today in the studio, it's the 5th anniversary of the album that's all killer and no filler.
Well, when we started the band, I know what I wanted to do. I wanted to make music which was really that people would respect. You know, that your fellow musicians like Jeff and Eric and people like that. You know, and they'd say, "Yeah, what you're doing is good." You know.
I mean, we just did it whatever we wanted to do, and said, "Look, for us, we had to just weave around wherever it was most appropriate." With amplifiers, without, it doesn't matter, in the desert, on the top of a Welsh mountain, wherever it was, which could be indicative and it could show what we were all about.
When we were out touring, and that album hadn't come out, and we played Stairway in the Forum, and we got a standing ovation, and I thought, oh, brilliant.
Hello, this is Robert Plant.
Hello again, this is Jimmy Page in the studio for Led Zeppelin 4.
To be sure, there were several legendary albums, a notoriously hedonistic reputation, and eventually tragic days ahead for Led Zeppelin over the next decade. But in November 1971, Led Zeppelin had recorded 4 albums in only 3 years while touring North America 7 times in the same period. By elevating their game to such heights, Led Zeppelin had pulled all of hard rock with them into the new decade and had a great time doing it, according to Jimmy Page.
We were having fun. I was having fun all the way through. Yeah, really. Really, all the way through. Not just here, but all the way through. I know what you mean about the pressure. I think the sort of pressures hit people later in individual ways, you know. Everyone got affected by suddenly feeling themselves on a pedestal, I suppose. You know, that's what it is, you know. Well, when we started the band, I know what I wanted to do. I wanted to make music which was really that people would respect, you know, that your fellow musicians like Jeff and Eric and people like that, you know, and they'd say, "Yeah, what you're doing is good," you know. And obviously, and I knew it was good, but I hadn't got the faintest idea that it was ever going to become as big as what it did, obviously. I mean, but I hadn't even thought or wished it to. I think the only thing I wanted to do was to do something which could stand the test of time. So, in fact, everything has happened that way. So that's, you know, it's great. It couldn't be more rewarding, really.
Hey, mama said the way you move gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
Away.
Guitarist Jimmy Page explains how the song, recorded along with the majority of Led Zeppelin IV in the English country manor house known as Headley Grange, how the song came to be known as Black Dog.
Well, in this house, this Headley Grange, there was an old black dog there, one night it went off, because it was really quite old, and one night obviously been off, you know, doing the things that dogs do, and came back and slept all day, and, you know, it was quite a powerful image at the time, so we called it Black Dog. Black Dog is partially John Paul Jones riff, and partially mine as well. And I guess if we want to say that we lent on something, it could be as far as the stretch of it. If you remember Oh Well, where it sort of stops and there's a vocal, that's it. So there you are. Now they'll sue us. No, but I mean, the whole thing was to have like a really heavy riff.
Certainly by now you probably think you know everything there is to know about Led Zeppelin's fourth album. Rolling Stone magazine ranks Led Zeppelin IV at number 66 on its all-time 500 best album list, but real fans place it much higher. Led Zeppelin IV is tied for the number 3 best-selling album of all time in the United States. But here's some more facts that are simply hard to kind of comprehend. For instance, after the album's release, 1971, November, the initial reviews were mixed. And this came following Rolling Stone magazine's accusations that Led Zeppelin had appropriated the music of American blues men without credit or compensation on their second album, followed by outright claims from the British press of pandering to America with the Crosby, Stills, and Nash acoustic style on Led Zeppelin III. I asked Led Zeppelin guitarist, producer, and co-writer Jimmy Page if any of that critical sniping affected Led Zeppelin's musical direction for Zeppelin IV.
No, because we thought what we were doing was right and good, you know, and we felt it was quality music, and we had to, I mean, you've got to live by what you believe in, otherwise you might just as well forget it, as far as I'm concerned, and that's what everyone is. I'm speaking for all of us at that point, at least as well as I can believe everyone felt at that point.
1970's Led Zeppelin III album had been a transitional album, the all-important bridge to later five-star work such as Physical Graffiti. But at the time of its release, Led Zeppelin III's acoustic arrangements and Middle Eastern influences confounded critics. Led Zeppelin lead singer and lyricist Robert Plant contends that the detractors simply failed to recognize the band's growth.
Yeah, but there was no restraint with the whole idea of being with or without an amplifier. I mean, we just did it whatever we wanted to do and said, look, for us, we had to just weave around wherever it was most appropriate. With amplifiers, without, it doesn't matter. In the desert, on the top of a Welsh mountain, wherever it was, which could be indicative and, you know, it could show what we were all about. Were and are.
Spend my days with a woman and kind, smoke my stuff and drink all my wine. Made up my mind, make a new start. Going to California with an aching in my heart. Someone told me there's a girl out there with love in her eyes and flowers in her hair. My chances on a big jet plane. Never let them tell you that we all are the same. Oh, the sea was red and the sky was gray. One that had tomorrow could ever follow today. Mountains and the canyon start to tremble and shake. The children of the sun begin. Watch out. called a king. They say she plays guitar and cries and sings. La la la. Ride a white mare in the footsteps of doom, trying to find a woman who's never, never, never been born. Standing on the hill in the mountain of dreams, telling myself it's not as hard, hard, hard as it seems. Mm-hmm.
Going to California comes from Led Zeppelin IV. The British music press were openly resentful of Led Zeppelin's superstar success after three albums in America. So Jimmy Page stifled their accusations of being a hype by releasing Led Zeppelin's fourth album without the band's name or without the album's title anywhere on the cover.
No, the only thing, you see, I hadn't realized that it was success as such, but I knew that we were getting a lot of hammerings from different people. The critics, they were saying, oh, it's a hype, it's a hype, it's a hype. That is the reason why on the fourth album there's no title on it. He said, you know, might just as well, what if they say it's a hype, well, then this is a good way of saying it isn't a hype, by untitling it and saying, well, here we are, you know. It's not being sold by the name of the band, it's the content of the material. Vern's name's not on it at all, anywhere, and nor is the manufacturer's. Had a lot of trouble, mind you. I remember being in the Atlantic office there with a lawyer for 2 hours while he kept bringing out all these books saying, you've got to have that. I said, all right then, if that's what you want to do, then rerun it on the inside back here, on the inside of the print your Rockefeller Plaza or whatever it is down there. Of course, they didn't want to have to do a rerun on it, so it went out like this. But I tell you, it was a hard job. But you see, the thing is, fortunately, we were in a position there to be able to say that this is what we want, because, you know, we had actually, you know, attain the status whereby that album was going to sell a lot of albums. Now, obviously not as many as we didn't think it would sell as many as what it did, but we knew it was going to sell a lot, you know, because of the whole sort of vibe of the band and, you know, everything else.
Long before Prince changed his name to a symbol in a legal maneuver to get around a contract, Led Zeppelin entitled their fourth album simply by Four Symbols. Guitarist Jimmy Page explains.
First of all, this whole anonymity aspect of it. We were just going to have one symbol on the cover. But then that was going to be difficult. Who was going to choose a symbol? Well, all four of us could. So in fact, we all chose our own symbols. The first one is mine. This, the one with the sort of... Well, it's apparently supposed to be extremely difficult to draw freehand. It's one of those sort of... And that's John Paul Jones's. The one with the three circles is Bonzo's, and the one with the feathers, Roberts.
Yeah.
Next, Jimmy Page reveals secrets as to the unique sound of this benchmark album and who the so-called fifth member of Led Zeppelin really was. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Jimmy Page and Robert Plant on the anniversary of Led Zeppelin 4.
Hello, this is Robert Plant.
Hello again, this is Jimmy Page in the studio for Led Zeppelin 4.
Thank you both. I'm Redbeard. Prior to forming Led Zeppelin, Jimmy Page had been a most in-demand, yet youngest, session guitarist in London, working with famed producer Mickey Most at Immediate Records, eventually following Eric Clapton and Jeff Beck as lead guitarist in the legendary Yardbirds. During his 2 years with them, Page felt that the Yardbirds were handled poorly by their business manager, Simon Napier Bell. So when it came time to find a manager for his band, Led Zeppelin, Jimmy chose a former wrestler and stuntman of monolithic proportions named Peter Grant, who Jimmy Page had met years earlier.
Oh, when I was still working in the studio, I was doing production work for Immediate Records, which was one of it probably was the first independent record label over there. And their office at the time, before they actually got any hits and things, was in the same building as where Mickey Most was, and Peter Grant was working with Mickey Most in virtually the same office. One was doing management, the other was doing records. And so that's the first time I met him. And then it just so happened that when Simon Napier Bell, who was a saw an opportunity, instead of keeping the Yardbirds together when there was friction between the rest of them and Jeff, went, all right, okay, here we go. Now I'll make this into two packages. Instead of trying to get the band back together, which I was trying to do, he made two packages, Jeff Beck and the Yardbirds. But Peter Grant came in on the management on both. So we went back quite a way, really.
Thank you.
Misty Mountain Hop comes from Led Zeppelin 4. 3 days after its U.S. release, Led Zeppelin started a tour of major English cities. 19,000 seats for two shows at London's Wembley Arena sold out in 1 hour. The entire English multi-city tour sold out in 24 hours. With the strong-arm methods of manager Peter Grant, Led Zeppelin now began making enormous amounts of money, which, in turn, made Peter Grant very powerful in the music business. Again, Jimmy Page.
Well, he was able to use the muscle for a lot of the ideas that we had, you know. I mean, also, you've got to understand that because of the band was getting really big, it gave him a lot of clout, you know. So it was working really good. I mean, really, he was a fifth member, if you want to put it that way. I would put it that way.
The production of Led Zeppelin IV is a sonic marvel. In the AllMusic Guide, writer Stephen Thomas Erlewine states, and I quote, Led Zeppelin's untitled fourth album is a monolithic record defining not only Led Zeppelin, but the sound and style of 70s hard rock, end quote. The person who produced this masterpiece is Jimmy Page, who attributes much of the ambience to recording at the Cavernous Manor House, Headley Grange.
The secret of a lot of this is the fact of where it was recorded. And by this time, we got to the... This was where John Bonham was actually in the hallway of a three-story house. So you could, and there was just one... For instance, Levy Breaks, which is a classic, OK? He's in that room on... He's in the hallway on his own. And the microphone... The stairway is leading up all the way round, you know, the stairwell, so to speak. And the microphone is one stereo mic coming out sort of 1.5 floors up above the kit. The rest of us are in another room, except we, well, I had my amplifier in another room, and I was in there with him, and so was Jonesy. And that was the first album with the mobile track. So therefore, the thing of the ambience, you know, it started now to go the whole hog, you know. And when the Levy Breaks, that was a riff that I had written round the original Levy Breaks, so to speak. But as far as the recording of it goes, the idea was to bring in something new on each verse, depending on how subtle it is. You know, nevertheless, there's always something new there, you know, like a change of the vocal texture.
We'll be right back.
When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin was adapted from a Memphis Minnie song written in 1928. Next, Robert Plant rejoins Jimmy Page for the story behind what is possibly the most popular rock song, I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Jimmy Page and Robert Plant on the anniversary of Led Zeppelin IV.
Hello, this is Robert Plant.
Hello again, this is Jimmy Page in the studio for Led Zeppelin IV.
Once again, thanks guys. Late 1970, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant returned to the Welsh cottage where they'd composed so much of Led Zeppelin III. Led Zeppelin lead singer and lyricist Robert Plant in the studio.
We went to Wales originally because we'd been touring for month after month after month with Zeppelin 1 and 2. And when I was a kid, I used to go to this cottage, which was quite remote. I'm not by American standards, you know. It wasn't. But it was, for us, it was a complete change from what we'd been doing, which was constantly playing all these festivals. And
especially 2 years we were on, wasn't it?
Yeah. So without electricity and without all the trappings and no telephone and no this, that, the other, the whole deal was to have a break and see if we could really stimulate ourselves. Exactly what I was saying about we had to stretch it. And that's what we did. It was. It had its moments, and at other times we would kind of draw in blanks, but at least, because from the very beginning of working together, the acoustic guitar had been there, whether it was on Babe, I'm Going to Leave You or Your Time Is Going to Come Through. So it was no big deal. It was just kind of important to get away from a whole lot of love and say, hey, well, and we also do this.
The Queen of Lying took her bow. She turned to go. The Prince of Peace embraced the gloom and walked the night alone. Doesn't the dark of night seem to her more? Dark Lord rides in force tonight, and time will tell us all. Throw down your blind pole. Rest not till I blow. Side by side. Shake the castle wall, the ring raised right in black. Right on,
situation right on. Shoot straight to them before.
No comfort here, the fire at night, the lights of face so cold.
Dance in the dark of night, sing to the morning.
Shining, the clouds are blue, oh why? With flames
change from the dragon of darkness to some lifelines, cause
Here's Jimmy Page in the studio.
Certain things would frustrate me, but in the end, I got to the point where I used to get music papers and things like that, and in the end, I didn't get them because, well, I just stopped buying them. Not because of what they were writing about us, but, I mean, I'd go and see a concert of somebody else, and it'd be a great concert, and I'd get the papers. It used to come through every Friday. There's about four of them over there. And I'd look and I'd see this concert review, like, what the hell is this all about? It's got nothing whatsoever to do with that concert that I saw. And I, you know, it was they had this policy that you were God one minute and shit the next, you know, and that's the way that they, you know, to keep the paper going, the controversy and stuff, you know. And in the end, I thought, that's trash, I'm not bothered to read this, I'd rather listen. I mean, yeah, I did get affected by some of the criticism because I thought this isn't, you know, they'd say, oh, you know, it's a hype and all that sort of stuff. And in fact, I thought, we knew it wasn't. We knew it was like, you know, we were sticking to our guns. We weren't. The dead opposite thing was that we would have a hype. We, you know, a hype is something which, well, I mean, okay, there can be the media hype, but the whole thing of just, you know, sustaining maybe exactly the same thing, trying to go for it all the way through exactly the same sort of riff with variations to it, you know. Which is what we were doing at all. It's contrast.
This time, they hope to write a centerpiece for their live show to replace Dazed and Confused.
The idea of what I had there was to start it with this acoustic piece, and then for it to build almost like an adrenaline rush by the end. And so, in fact, it actually gets faster from beginning to end. It increases in tempo, and you know that's something that even then the whole thing about. You know, music was to keep it, you know, very, very solid, you know. That's the whole thing about keeping the beat, you know, don't speed up, don't slow down. Or is the thing, the tempo's dropping or whatever. So anyway, I thought this would be a good way, you know, a good way to structure something like that. But Robert wasn't actually there at the point when I was running it through with Jonesy and Bonzo. He came in once we got it more or less. I don't know whether he'd been listening outside. But he actually came in and he wrote 60% easy of those words. There and then, when he actually came in, he started just jotting away, and he went away and worked again on the lyrics afterwards. But the hardest bit to get together was the intro to the solo, the fanfare part, I always used to call it, and that was a bit, you know, that we were going over that and leading up to it. Anyway, he was writing these sort of words down, and lo and behold, then we just put it on a Revox at the time when we were out touring, and that album hadn't come out. And we played Stairway in the Forum, and we got a standing ovation. I thought, oh, brilliant, you know. Because, I mean, I knew, well, we all knew it was good, but that was like, you know, for somebody to hear a number, and at that time it was quite a long number, you know, and for the first time, it's always difficult hearing music for the first time, isn't it, you know? That's how I knew it was quite something, yeah. I mean, you know yourselves, but as I said to you earlier on, you don't know exactly what you got until you get, you know, until you got the feedback from the people.
she can get what she came for. She's buying a stairway to heaven. There's a sign on the wall, but she wants to be sure. 'Cause you know sometimes words have two meanings. In a tree by the brook, there's a songbird who sings. Sometimes all of our thoughts thank you.
I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking Jimbo, Jimmy Page, and Robert Plant. In the studio, written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2016, all rights reserved, transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.